Hello, welcome to Music Industry Insights. This is Evan Murray. You can reach me at evan@musicindustryins.net. evan@musicindustryins.net. This podcast you're listening to is based in the country of Kenya, which is in the continent of Africa. And it is actually on the east side. So if you're looking at a globe, it's on the right side of the continent of Africa. How do we escape law in the music business? I think law plays a huge role. And in this podcast, I interview an entertainment lawyer. So Liz is based in Kenya. And she has been associated with the Kenyan music industry. She was an artist at one time. And she is also an intellectual property lawyer. And that goes into entertainment field as well. You'll hear all her specifications in this conversation. Now, the interesting thing is that, yes, laws change depending, you know, what country you're in or what region you're in. But the generalization of entertainment law is pretty much the same. It just depends on the jurisdiction of, you know, crime or the punishment or what, you know, licensing and ownership and that kind of stuff. Those are the kind of the variables, what are inside the law, you know, towards punishment and such. But overall, the law is, you know, the same, much like assaulting someone or killing someone. In some countries, you may get the death penalty. In some countries, you may get a number of years. So it is a large topic. It was a great conversation. I mean, the conversation only lasts about 40 minutes, I think. And Liz really knows her stuff across the board. And, you know, she's also available to work with, too. So, as always, take what you can from it. Extract what you can. And most of all, enjoy it.
Hi, Liz. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Hey, awesome. So, can you introduce yourself and tell us more about what you do?
Okay. So, I'm an intellectual property, entertainment, media, and fashion lawyer. So I am fully licensed to practice in the Kenyan bar. I practice under the name and style of my IP Legal Studio, which is basically a boutique legal services firm that specializes in these areas of law. So I only handle this kind of law. So when my clients need anything outside IP and entertainment, I have a firm that helps them with that. So predominantly, my clients include musicians, record labels, actors, celebrities. What else can I call them? Sportsmen and women. So, you know, basically anyone in the creative economy, I generally represent them. And then once in a while, I will get corporates and NGOs that try to use the arts in their marketing programs and whatnot. And I help them and guide them to make sure that they use them in a very fair and kosher manner and give artists a fair deal. So I think that's in a nutshell what I do. And, you know, this area of law was informed by my love for the arts. I used to be in a singing group. you know, the challenges of girl groups and boy bands and whatnot. I think in Africa, we are still struggling with trying to make them last long or live at least a profitable life, right? So with the insights I had as a member of a girl group, I realized that there was so much that artists were unaware of, and that's how I ended up being an entertainment lawyer. Yeah.
Okay. So when we talk about entertainment lawyer, like you're also talking about like you're an intellectual property lawyer. You work in the music and the fashion industry. You mentioned also like entertainment, which is sports as well. So do these worlds, like the world of the intellectual property and say music, fashion, and sports, like how do they interact with each other? Like as far as where you're sitting, like can you give me some examples or just explain that to me a little bit more?
Okay. So intellectual property law is the it's a body of law that generally put or rather creates the standard base for any entertainment, fashion, sports person. Because this is about the creations of the mind. So you're an artist, you come up with a song. Intellectual property law helps you to understand how you protect yourself, what kind of rights you have, and how then you can commercialize them in a way that also makes sense to you and to the people around you and the people you're working with. So it would be the same thing with fashion. It's about the designs that you create. Are they protectable? If they are, what is the best strategy to protect them? Looking at your business sense, especially, you know, how do you want to commercialize? Where are you producing? Then how I protect you? You know, so that's what intellectual property law will do for you. And then it has somewhat some relationship with image rights. So image rights, not really per se an IP right, but it's one of those related rights that, you know, arise with the kind of brands that celebrities become in themselves or they create as themselves. So again, even with sports people, again, it may be their names. It may be the kind of signs that they like to use, like 11 of hearts, you know, that's a registered trademark, and all these other things. So basically IP helps the people in these spaces to, you know, package the ideas that they have and some of the things that they do to become intellectual property assets.
Right. So, and when we talk about assets, we're talking about like things that are worth monetary value, obviously. Like
exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned that you're working with celebrities and you're working with like athletes and these kind of things. So are the laws, like, as far as you know, do the laws differentiate from like country to country? Like, are the laws for intellectual property or say licensing or, you know, every inside of the, you know, the type of law that you're doing, do they differentiate when you go to different countries?
They sort of do, but not in a very extreme manner. So for example, with copyright, the only difference that you may observe, for example, is in some countries, they are very serious on moral rights, which means the author's right to be attributed as the author is taken very seriously. In the US, it only applies to visual artists, for example. In Kenya, we are very heavy on moral rights, so which means even if I was commissioned to write a song for someone or to do a painting for someone, they will always have to say and credit me and basically say this painting was, you know, painted by Liz or something like that. And even with moral rights come issues of, you know, the ability of an artist or an author to basically say that I don't like how you're using my work, you're mutilating it, please stop, kind of situation. So there's that. In some countries with copyright, you may be mandated by law, required by law to register, because the general principle is that copyright is automatic. The minute you put it down in paper, you draw that painting or you draw that picture or you write that music, it's automatically, you know, the law automatically confirms that you have copyright. However, because of, you know, sometimes how do I confirm or how do I prove that it was my copyright and not Evan's copyright, for example. So then the registration is mandated, because it also makes it easier when we are in a fight and go to court. And how do I then show that I took the initiative to confirm my rights, for example. When it comes to trademark law, the principles are sort of the same. They may vary maybe in relation to the use of names. So if I wanted to brand my business by my name, can I get exclusivity? That is what trademarks will grant you. So you'll find some countries are very categorical that they do not give trademarks in names, because of, you know, that becomes a fight that everyone who can say that I'm the only Elizabeth, for example, right? So you find that some regulations may change or vary depending on the jurisdiction. You know, we have what we call industrial designs in Kenya, which protects the aesthetics of designs, for example. In the US, they call them patent designs. So sometimes you find that the vary might be the names that are used or the words that are used to describe something. But generally, the principles are the same, and the variations can be quite minimal depending. So at the end of the day, it's IP law basically states that, you know, when you create something, you as the author have economic rights, and how the law then provides on how you commercialize and enjoy these economic rights.
And what about when, like, if you have an artist that, you know, comes to you and, you do copywriting for them, or, you know, some intellectual like protection for them. Does that carry over, say, if they like, you know, if they go and like, if they go and start selling their product in Europe, does that protection still, like, yes, I know, I understand the protection may stay visible on the internet, let's say, because it's their digital property. But what about if they're selling items, or if they have a logo, like, does that still protect them in Europe or in North America? You know, if the law stands in Kenya, let's say.
Yeah. So intellectual property is very territorial. These laws are very territorial. So you're protected in your country of protection and declaration. So if I register a trademark in Kenya, I'm only protected in Kenya. So if I have a strategy that I want to commercialize, you know, in Uganda, for example, or in the US, then I have to make sure that I'm aware of the laws and figure out how to effectively do that. Sometimes you may find that you may not necessarily need to register in another country, but maybe you may have to employ other different ways. For example, if you decided to franchise, right, then you can let the franchisee take care of those costs and figure out an agreement that makes sure that at the end of the day, you are still compensated, even though you may not have been the person to have done the registration directly, for example. But ideally, it's territorial. So, you know, when you're even creating, you have to be very deliberate in terms of what is your long-term plan, so that at the end of the day, you still have that sort of identification. You have that sometimes even priority, that no one else is confused with your brand in another country. So it will definitely pin down to what kind of economic strategy you have for yourself. Yeah.
Okay, so that means, like, yeah, right. So what you're saying is that in your, like, if you're planning on taking your business to another country, you should look at these things ahead of time, and not, you know, you should plan for it. Like, if you're going to be branding in another country and such. And I mean, and that's logical, and it's good to know. I mean, it's good to know how this functions, because that means that there is also a, you know, if you are planning on doing international business, that you need to be, you have to have this knowledge in order to do it successfully. So would that open the gateway then to how, like, I mean, are you open for international consultancy then as well, or do you just primarily work with clients in Kenya?
I also do international consultancy. I've even had instances where, I have an artist who just needs an opinion on even their laws. So I take those kinds of briefs, because I also get to learn more about other laws outside Kenya, because it also helps me pitch the opportunities for my clients to also diversify and, you know, basically have other offices maybe around the world, or figure out other investment opportunities. So I definitely usually, you know, interact with clients outside Kenya. I have defended also briefs against either Kenyan entities or Kenyan entities versus an international entity, for example. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about that for a bit. Like, so how would something of like that occur, where you have an entity in Kenya that has to, you know, go to court with an outside entity? Like, tell me a little bit about that. What kind of occurrence is that?
Okay, so a lot has been happening, especially when it comes to digital use of intellectual property, so copyright matters on the online space.
Right.
So, yeah, so you find like maybe a photographer here took a picture, put it on their Facebook, and an international company decided to use it on one of their marketing campaigns online. Right. So in such an instance, then I come in play, you know, when the client contacts me and they inform me of this situation, I get to know more about what kind of protective measures they have taken. At the same time, also help them manage themselves on social media, because, you know, what happens with guys on social media when something, an infringement occurs on their property, they tend to get all crazy and start yelling and calling each other names and whatnot. So, but they don't realize that that really works against the legal strategy and any potential they could have to, you know, make some money or, you know, get compensated, right? So at this instance now I get in the picture, mitigate that circumstance and then start looking at who exactly is this user, investigate the extent in which this particular work has been used. I have a conversation with the client about the kind of amount they would be asking for regarding copyright infringement, if that is the case. Then I go further and I study this particular country's laws, even look into some of their jurisprudence and some of the cases that they have, because that kind of information also now informs how I draft the demand letter and how I can, you know, so that they can see that I actually know their law, right? And then I basically push for out-of-court settlements where we just mediate the situation and my clients get paid, I get paid, we're all happy.
So what happens in the instance if the company, okay, so like I'm a company, right? Like I have a registered number, and then the companies I work for in Canada and Sweden, they actually hire that number. And, you know, that's how I get paid as a, you know, more or less like a consultant who coordinates conferences and showcases. So say I'm an entity, like I'm a company, but I'm like living in Taiwan. And then what I do is I post, you know, I take a person from Kenya, I take their picture. I say this instance is with me, let's say. I take their intellectual property, I post it online, you find out that it's me. Now, the thing is, digitally, like it's like one space. And yes, I'm a Canadian citizen, but I'm living in Taiwan. How does that make it complicated, or is it all based on my citizenship?
So it will be based on the country of use and infringement, basically. So where is the work being used without authorization? And that would be the country of focus. So if you are using it in Taiwan, then we'd be looking at
the potential. Okay, but that's saying if I actually focus the advertisement. And the thing about the internet, it's like it's international, or it's not even international. I mean, does the internet have borders? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know what I mean? So like if I was just to say publicly, you say if I'm advertising something, but I don't have a district or a destination, say I just publicly spam it. I use this in an advertisement, but I publicly spam, you know, all over the world on the internet. When you confront me, are you confronting me against Canadian law then? Or are you confronting me as a entity on the internet, or how does that work?
So I would I'd investigate further about how are you registered, which country are you registered in, what kind of business interests are you focused on, and, you know, just looking at even how the weaknesses that you may have, because that's what I would do. That the legal strategy is basically about that, right? I figure out where I'm going to slap you in the knee and you can't walk.
I love your honesty.
So, because that's basically what I'll do. And so my homework would just to make sure what's Evan's business about, and you know what are his current projects, and you know, if he's in trouble right now with a client of mine, how can I threaten him and see that he's going to be in trouble and he's going to lose some more money if he doesn't listen to me and give me audience on behalf of my client.
Now, so is it also the fact that you're kind of like, when you're looking at intellectual property and also like copyright infringement and things that we're talking about, is it a certain amount of goodwill that the person let's say, are you hoping that the person A, like didn't do this intentionally or didn't realize they were actually infringing on somebody's copyright? Because are you relying on more of it being goodwill for the person to say, oh, sorry about that, I didn't mean to hurt this person, you know, I can pay for what I did or something like that? Because is there a way, if I'm existing on the internet, like is there an actual way for me to be penalized in any sort of way? Because when we talk about how copyright is actually national, right? So it's actually happening in each national country. But so this is what I'm wondering, because I know like companies like Disneyland, let's say, or you know, mega corporations, if you put a sign up, like it doesn't matter, you know, if you're in East Africa or in Kenya and you put a sign up and it infringes on their copyright, they're still going to sue you. So, and how do they do that? That's what I'm wondering. Like, how does one country or one, like, how would you go about actually getting the compensation for your client?
Okay. So it's a little different when it's on the digital space versus, you know, maybe happening in the country itself.
In the physical world, right? Yeah, yeah.
So in the so because in the physical world, like, you know, the, with the examples of like Disney, they have local agents, right? So they have people always looking out, you know, shopping on their behalf. And, you know, checking and making sure that no one is trying to use their brand on, you know, any merchandise or goods in the market or on billboards. And we've seen that a lot, especially in Kenya, when it comes to Disney. We've had, you know, companies in the condiments industry and, you know, maybe chewing gum or whatever it was. And they may not have had licenses at the time, but eventually they realized that we actually need to take out licenses. So they've been very strategic because remember, intellectual property rights are very personal, which means it's a personal right that you as the owner have to take initiative. You have to be very deliberate in how you protect yourselves, how you commercialize, and the kind of infrastructure that you put around your business to make sure that you're constantly making money. And that as well as, you know, the goodwill that you're talking about, that my brand is not diluted and it's used as I would want it to be used. Most times you find that some may use this intellectual property without knowledge, but the general premise of the law is that ignorance of the law is not defense. So what you do sometimes as a lawyer, you'll be looking at the party who's infringing and negotiate. You know, there'll be some that, you know, you're like, okay, this guy doesn't have money, but maybe a simple, sorry, I apologize, may be enough, right? Especially for some of these big companies, because it would make sense that I know that this particular person can barely make ends meet and they're just vocal on social media and I try to sue them for $1 million that they don't have, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's about strategy. It's also, you know, some of these legal strategies may affect the goodwill of a brand. So which means they have to be very deliberate and very purposeful with some of these strategies, because some of them may work to the detriment of the brand and then some may make sense and commercial sense.
Right. Like you really have to strategize about how you go about, you know, I guess communicating with someone about these kind of matters. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of, well, that's why you want to use a lawyer, right? Because you have representation and you don't have to like study the, you know, how to go about, you know, communicating in this depth.
So
the thing is, like, is it like, obviously it's a good idea then. So say, like, what about these? So there's like licensing firms all over the world for music, right? Like there's like ASCAP, yeah. BMG and SOCAN and so on and
Harry
so
Fox.
On. Right. Yeah. So are, do you guys exist? Do you exist in that realm in Kenya?
So in Kenya, we are still embracing the use of licensing firms. So we have a very interesting method in terms of how we handle music. Also because we have our own local innovations that have really catapulted the music industries. For example, here we have what we call Skiza Tunes that is owned by our biggest telecom company, Safaricom. So that has been like the biggest disruptor in the music industry. And now in our country, what we have is the premium rate service provider. So these are basically companies that get the content from the artists and then they, you know, they redesign the files so that then it can fit in my mobile phone, for example, as a ringback tone or whatever it is. And then, you know, people have subscribership and the money they pay, the money is paid, the PRS fees will collect on behalf of the artist and then the artist will be paid. So depending if the artist was represented by a publisher, then the PRS fee will pay the publisher. If it was an artist themselves directly, they'll be paid directly. If it was an artist through the record label, they'll be paid through the record label. So we don't have the Harry Foxes of this world. So we have more of, if it's not the independent artists themselves, it's either through a record label or through a publisher.
That's interesting. You mentioned Harry Fox because Harry Fox actually works in movies as well, I believe, right? Like they like movies and such. That's really interesting. I mean, so how much are you involved in the actual music industry in Kenya itself then?
Quite a lot because I have a lot of you know, clients in the music industry here. Being an artist earlier, so a bulk of my clients are in the music industry. I have also been involved in collective management organizations and just figuring that out for a while. It gets to be very hectic. Then I took a backseat from the CMO world. So now I'm mostly focused on trying to help package artists for better deals in the recording industry, for better commercial deals. Because we have also artists who are in, you know, make hit singles or hit albums and they're broke. And then you realize it's either the kind of contracts that they signed. You realize also now I'm getting into wealth management for artists and just helping them find the right person to help them plan around their income and around their royalties, so that then, you know, when they are in trouble, they don't find themselves, you know, bankrupt or having to beg for money. I'd say I'm very involved in the music industry in Kenya. You know, having started out as a musician or a hopeful musician, and having seen, you know, the kind of challenges that the music industry has had, so I'm very involved with you know, helping artists here. So sometimes I find myself being more pro independent artists than, you know, label artists sometimes, just to get them to understand some of these basic legal principles so that they can make better deals. I have been in the collective management organization world for a while. You know, trying to get the CMOs to educate the artists around their rights, understanding about royalties, understanding how they need to protect themselves, you know, while they're creating, during the creation process, and how that trickles down to how even the royalties that they receive are collected. Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, that has been my passion. That is where I have been. I have several clients in the music industry in Kenya, in Tanzania, in Uganda. I advise a few people. I also have advised some of these startup companies that are in music distribution as well, and making sure that they understand the industry and they make or you know, they're involved in very good deals or kosher deals that are pro the artist and pro their business, and trying to make them understand also what bad PR would mean for such businesses, because the competition is very stiff, right? Mm. Yeah, and I've also sat in the Copyright Tribunal here in Kenya. That you know, is an ad hoc, you know, it's a specialized court basically under the Copyright Act, where we listen to copyright matters, and we've had one or two briefs that were actually around the music business.
Okay, do you? And I'm gonna like throw a thing to left field here for a second. Do you know the population of Kenya right at this time, like roughly?
At this time, I think we're roughly about 42 million.
Okay, so it's a substantial population. And have you seen the growth of, like, is there an international interest? Do you see international interest in Kenya at all? Are you witnessing that at all?
Yeah, we're witnessing that a lot. We have seen, you know, on the music side, we are seeing a lot of international labels and publishers getting into Kenya. Some of them even had already been here. So you get to realize when you know, you're involved in a brief and you realize, oh, this Kenyan artist is signed with a Norwegian firm. And you're like, what? No way. Of all places, you know. So we've seen that we have so many foreign companies here who are interested, and so many more are trickling in. You know, we are seeing a lot of developments in the fashion industry. We have a lot of brands that are trying to collaborate with some of our fashion designers. In the film industry as well, we have a lot of collaborations with various countries and entities from, you know, all over Europe and even the US. So we've been seeing a lot of focus on that. So we're just hoping that, you know, like the Kenyans are also noticing this and you know, packaging themselves competitively, because that's the other thing. You know, when these investors come, they will come with the most competitive person or entity that is packaged, you know, ready for business. And sometimes, again, if you're not packaged, well packaged, then, you know, these guys may take advantage of your lack of organization and you end up signing a bad deal. So, yeah, but there's a lot of interest here.
Well, I really appreciate your honesty, Liz, and also like the way that you kind of, you know, I mean, your information is like solid and it's really organized. So I really appreciate that, because it really gives a greater insight to, I mean, if someone is, and I'll say it straight out, like when we look at Africa as a continent in total, I mean, there's a lot of people talking about certain parts of Africa and develop, you know, the industry that's developing there and companies going in. And I mean, because we live in a world that's based off, you know, monetization, you know, on the internet, on the web, is that when we talk about, like, you know, I mean, populations like 42 million, it becomes very, very attractive for, you know, artists coming out of different countries with a much less population. So there has been a lot of talk. And I mean, I guess it's been about a year and a half now that I've been having conversations about East Africa, because I had met one of your colleagues, actually, who she introduced me to you. And a lot of those conversations have been about, you know, unifying some countries in East Africa to kind of cooperate together as a cooperative, because there are places in, say, like West Africa cooperating, or like the country of South Africa and South African countries cooperating in some sort of way. Have you seen a real change in the Kenyan or East African music industry in, say, the last, you know, 5 to 10 years?
Oh, there's a very huge difference. I mean, the growth has been exponential. You know, 10 years ago, you would not imagine a local recording artist driving a Range Rover. You know, because, you know, as especially for us, we sometimes equate success to some of the fancy things that we can afford, right? And 10 years ago, you know, finding an artist, just an artist, has no side job, basically just recording, driving a Range, for example. We have seen, you know, a lot of endorsements for our artists as well. So it's become a multi-million industry right now, not like before where, you know, when they were lucky, they make a little money here or royalties, you know, and yeah. So it also, even in terms of the different commercial entities and corporates understanding the value of intellectual property, the value of copyright, and their need to actually license this work has also grown, which means there's a lot of money now flowing in the industry, and the artists now are better compensated than before.
And where's the main sources of money coming from for artists in Kenya?
So the main sources here are one, the Skiza tunes that I mentioned, because they have they penetrate at least almost 70% of these 42 million, because our mobile use is like quite big. So they still have a very good penetration in terms of the market, and their products are also very diverse. So from the ringback tones to you know, the streaming services and whatnot. So depending on which part of the country you're in, you know, even if I cannot maybe stream because I don't have good broadband, but at least I have my ringback tone. Every time you call me, you hear a certain song, and then I like to change it maybe every week. You know, that's revenue for them, right? Then we have now the digital space, in terms of you know, celebrities, you know, the musicians, the artists are now becoming more influencer type of businesses as well. So we are seeing a lot of them collaborating with international corporations and local companies, and they get these endorsement deals and they also make some good money.
Interesting. So, I mean, there's an ecosystem definitely. And there is obviously, like, there's opportunity for anyone to be going into Kenya to make money from, you know, art and music, but there's also, I mean, and how important is it to the Kenyan, like, business ecosystem, I'm focusing on music now especially, how important is that for export, like working in, you know, with international companies or working outside of Kenya itself? Is it important, or can Kenya self-sustain itself, an artist in Kenya self-sustain themselves?
So like one of the things we found out is that some of our music, I think a majority of our music is more popular in Tanzania. And then
is that Tanzania, because of language? Music. Is that language? Is that reason? Or why?
It's something we have really yet to explain, because now bongo music in Tanzania is very popular in Kenya. So,
it's so weird. Like, it's like kind of like the grass is greener on the other side, kind of.
Yeah, thing. Something like that. So you realize you can't really say that you'll be, you know, self. You can, you know, sort of do it by yourself. We get lucky, of course, because we have a lot of Kenyans also in the diaspora, in the US, in Australia. We have Kenyans everywhere. So because of where they are in the globe, they also give this exposure to our artists. Right. You have a house party and you're like, oh my gosh, we have this Kenyan artist, you know, listen, have a listen, da, da, da. And then you find that now that kind of interaction sort of trickles down, and some of them are trying to figure out, how do I get this music? And, you know, when there's more demand in the different countries, then you find that then, you know, there'll be a company from the US, from you know, the UK or whatever it is, and they'll be like, oh, we have actually demand in our country and we're looking to sign some of the artists. So when that is happening now, it's just preparing the artist in terms of then how the kind of contracts that they have locally, and how they can then, you know, broaden their wings outside. So again, you know, trying to advise clients on exclusive agreements versus non-exclusive agreements, so that then they understand what that means. If you're locked down with one particular company for all the territories in the world, it means all your eggs are in one basket. So you may not be make as much money as the person who maybe has, you know, different strategies in different parts of the world, for example. But we've seen that our music is really appreciated, not just by Kenyans, but guys outside Kenya.
Well, and you know, that goes to say, because I mean, this is a perfect example of how I did an interview with a major band from India called Thakadam Bridge, and they've actually, like, they've toured all over the world. I think they've toured 22 countries now. They've toured in Kenya, and the reason why is because they sing in 5 different languages from India, and there's an audience in Kenya for that. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, like, the world is globalized, 100% it is. And I mean, you can find people from every country and every other country, let's say. And I, and then that was a big part of my lecture when I did lectures at the university in Taiwan, was like, hey, like, you should really, if you're going to enter the American market, like, you have to sing English in the American market. But if you're not singing English, then you should focus on the language that, you know, the culture or, you know, the people that you are going to be singing to. So I think obviously that relates the same to Kenya as well, because I mean, you guys, how many national languages do you have in Kenya?
Well, our national languages are only English and Kiswahili. And then We have about 42 tribes. So, and that means another 42 languages that Kenyans speak. And you'll find that if you're lucky, you meet one Kenyan who speaks at least maybe 3 or 4 of these languages. But most of us will just speak the national languages and maybe your native language.
Right. So that's another, yeah, I mean, it is interesting, like, because it depends how far away that you're looking, right? Like, if you look at the world globally, you know, you can say, like, okay, well, English is the, you know, standard for business language, let's say. But the closer and closer we go into a territory, and especially when we're talking about how to capitalize in a country, you know, we can really start to dissect about how it works regionally, or, you know, all the different aspects inside of a country. So there's a lot of really interesting information here, and really informative information. Is there ever a case where, like, the fashion and music industry are kind of coinciding inside of what you're doing as well? Or is everything kind of, you know, in its own lane?
No, they actually interact a lot. And I think the thing that made it, that pieced everything together, was the digital space. Because now when someone goes online, they'll be like, oh, so what is, I don't know, Beyonce wearing? So, of course, elements of fashion are coming in, and everyone is like, oh, she's been dressed by a Senegalese fashion designer, for example. There'll be instances of, oh, what film has she, you know, is she working with, or is there someone looking at her music? How are we pitching for this music to be in a film? You know, those kind of things are always happening. So you find that there will be that interaction definitely happens when the artist is shooting a music video, for example. What kind of contracts are there between the artist and the fashion designer, or even the stylist? Do they have the power to actually negotiate a contract on behalf of the artist and make sure that then the artist dresses in the way the outfit needs to be dressed, and you know, maybe there's some disclosures that, you know, the fashion designer has been expressed about and said, you know, as long as there's no profanity, then blah blah blah, then they can wear my design, or things like that. The kind of exchanges that are there, are they in kind? Are they monetary? You know, are there credits required, especially on the film side? You know, if you're doing your music video in the form, like, it's like a long video that would be like a film-like sort of thing, are you going to incorporate credits? And, you know, have they been negotiated for, you know, from the fashion designer to any other parties that are involved? So right now there's a lot of interaction across all these, you know, industries in the entertainment industry. So fashion, music, film, they're all coming in together, even design. So you find artists commissioning, you know, furniture designers, for example, and they say, you know what, this is the kind of set I need. I want you to build a seat from scratch that looks like this because my song is all about being a king, an African king, and I need blah, 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 you know, all that stuff. So you find that all this stuff now interacts with each other.
And I mean, that's kind of exceptional in a way, because when you talk about intellectual property, I guess it's like everything intellectual, if it can be manifested into life or if it's being shared or, you know, created and shared, if it has any kind of monetary value. And of course, there's inside monetary value to make monetary value outside, you know, of marketing or commercializing the product. So I want to wrap up here because I think that, like, you know, the information that we kind of gathered today is, I think there's something to process, but I want to kind of finish off on a question too, where, like, when we mentioned about how laws can be, you know, for the most part, it's standard from country to country, but there might be some variations of how those laws stand, let's say, or how they enforce those laws, you know, per se. Is there the availability for someone, say, like from Sweden, to get a hold of you and say, hey, like, you know, I'd like to have a consultation about what, you know, what actual intellectual property is, like kind of what we're doing, but to do it in a personalized way? Or would you say, actually, you know, you should be talking to someone in Sweden about these things? Like, how does that work?
So there's usually like a preliminary information. So on my website, myip.lawyer.
Where do we find you? Just spell it out. Like, where do we find you?
So my website is myip.lawyer, myip.lawyer, LAWYER. So I have a contact page where you can just send me an email. And then when I respond, I will first start by asking a couple of questions. I'll be like, okay, so you're from Sweden. What is the issue? Da, 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 da.
Why are you contacting me in Kenya?
Yeah, there's
sorry,
that.
Sorry, go ahead.
But for me, I'm like, okay, this is interesting. Let's see. You never know. Sometimes blessings come from very interesting or unexpected places. But I'll have those preliminary conversations. So if it's out of my space or my capabilities, I'll be able to tell them, okay, you know what, here. Then you might have to contact a Sweden person or rather a lawyer in Sweden. I have contacts and I hook them up with my contacts.
I think I met an honest lawyer today. So I'm kind of, I'm a little bit in shock, to be honest. I'm just kidding. There's so many jokes. You know, there's just so many jokes. Our lawyers are not honest. But yeah, no, I really appreciate it. I mean, it's really solid information. And I'm really glad to talk to you today. And I'm really looking forward to actually visiting Kenya and just kind of discovering for myself how the music industry is working and, you know, what possibilities are there to do some business. So, I mean, you know, thank you so much, Liz. And thanks for joining me today and taking part in this conversation.
Thanks for having me. And we look forward to welcoming you in Kenya. I hope when COVID is all sorted so that you can experience Kenya in its all floralness. We love parties. So that's why I think music is a big thing, because Kenyans and parties are inseparable.
Wow. Well, yeah, no, looking forward to it. And thanks again, and take care of yourself. And, you know, let's talk anytime kind of thing. All right.
For sure. Thank you for having me.
Cheers.
All right. Bye.
Bye for now.